Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Eliza Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is Thursday night. I'm your host, Mary Brotherton. I'm here with my co-host, Jean Albertson. Jean, how are you doing? I know today was a big day for you.
Oh, yeah, doing great. Hey, Mary, how you doing? I'm doing good.
Finally got your cup of coffee?
I never did find my cup. It must have gotten moved.
Oh, no.
But I did get another one. So I'm having
That's
coffee.
That's funny. Well, tonight, I'm really excited because it's almost like an open mic night for us, which is always a good challenge because you just never know what's going to happen. And tonight we have Kate Brewer with us, and I'm delighted because our scheduled guest was unable to make it, and Kate jumped in at the last minute and said, I'll do that. But one of the problems with that, or the challenges, not a problem, is that I didn't get any information about Kate. So I'm just going to say, Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It is fantastic to be here with you both.
Thank you. And I'm delighted that did you stay up or get up to do this show? Because you're in a different time zone.
Yes, I got up to do this show. It is on the earlier side here. I'm not typically a morning person, but since it's still dark outside, you know, it kind of feels like, you know, just night owl.
It feels like it might be still. Yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. So who is Kate Brewer? Where did you come from?
That is a great question.
Where did you start out in life?
Originally, I was born in Seattle, but I did not actually grow up there. I moved with my family to Southeast Asia when I was young. My father works for an organization that does all kinds of human rights and labor rights work overseas. So I grew up mostly in Sri Lanka and Indonesia. And after moving back to the States when I was about 16, I really got into focusing on film and writing. So I ended up going to Florida State Film School, which was fantastic. They have an amazing conservatory-style program that I very much enjoyed. And after graduating from there, I moved to Los Angeles and lived and worked there for 5 years, then decided I needed a new chapter, new adventure. So I left and I moved to Morocco for a couple of years. And eventually then found myself back in D.C. working for a nonprofit that does gender violence issues or does work on gender violence issues, which is a whole host of issues that I'm very passionate about. And it was there at this nonprofit in D.C. where I learned that forced and child marriage is still happening all across the United States, that it's still a very widespread issue. And that it's happening in all sorts of diverse communities. I was kind of shocked and aghast. And I like to think of myself as a worldly person who reads all kinds of news and tries to keep up on things. And I had no idea that this was going on. So after a while, I decided to kind of go back to my filmmaking roots and make my first feature documentary film, which is not a forced marriage story, which follows the stories of three survivors of forced and child marriage in the United States.
Well, because our listeners may not be looking at the screen to see this, I want to explain that knots is K-N-O-T-S, like you're tying knots, because I don't want them to think that it's a movie not about forced marriage. And you mentioned that it happens across a diverse population, because I was immediately thinking, okay, well, I know there are some extreme fundamental Mormons who do underage marriages, and you know, they don't think that they're forced, but and that's something I imagine that your documentary covers, is how this happens.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. It's one of the things we really go into in the film, is what a forced marriage actually looks like, because unfortunately, sometimes it does look like a gun to the head, but those are the rarer cases. There are so many different types of force, fraud, and coercion that happen to create a forced marriage, and children are especially vulnerable to being forced into marriage, but forced marriage can happen at any age. And typically, we either think of it as something that's happening in another country far away, or we think of it as only happening in select groups. And while it does happen in these smaller religious fundamental groups, it actually also happens just in just about every community you can think of. It happens in the suburbs, in the cities, in country. It happens, it really spans socioeconomic groups, cultural groups, ethnic groups. It's a shockingly diverse problem that still exists in the United States today.
How common is this?
That is the million-dollar question. So at least with
is that because people don't talk about it?
I think that is one way it has been perpetuated, for sure, is that it's not that people don't care necessarily. It's just that people just have no idea that this is going on and that it's happening next door and in their backyard. So when you say forced marriage, that conjures a very kind of specific idea in people's minds. But that's the whole one of the main reasons I wanted to make this documentary, because it is such a nuanced issue, and the force and fraud and coercion that happens in forced marriages looks so many different ways. And sometimes to people it can look a little bit innocuous, but unfortunately forced marriage itself is anything but innocuous. So getting into the nuances and complexities and hearing directly from survivors who can tell you what it's like from the inside was one of the key aspects of wanting to make this film.
Question. I remember when Elizabeth Smart was abducted and forced into marriage. Is that something that happens a lot? And do you remember the story of this young lady?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and her story is a harrowing one. And that can happen. It is the rarer case when we're talking about forced marriages. The more often, in fact, the majority of the time, the force is perpetuated by families and communities. And so when I began making this documentary 5 years ago, which is kind of wild to think about, child marriage was still legal through a variety of loopholes in every single state in the United States. Today, actually, there's a little bit of good news, which is Rhode Island just became the fifth and end child marriage in their state. But that means that there are still 45 states to go.
Yeah, my former sister-in-law was 13 when she got pregnant just so she could get married to a 21-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
you know, they thought they were in love, and Mama kept saying no, no, no. And they found the loophole, and she got pregnant, went to Maryland, and got married, and then got divorced.
Yeah, that unfortunately is often it's common for states to have laws that allow for children to be married at younger and younger ages if they're pregnant. And just like you said, unfortunately, the cases that do exist of this where the child is then married to adults, they're typically within the age range that would otherwise be statutory rape.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's really awful and unsettling that we have these laws that not only these legal loopholes that not only don't protect children but make them sort of trapped, basically.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, the same child, if her mother had, you know, she was dating a 21-year-old, she was 13. Well, she wasn't dating. She was sneaking around. But if her mother had insisted, he could have been arrested, branded a predator, and his life would have been ruined. Instead, they got a legal piece of paper that said they were okay to be together, and her life ended up ruined.
Exactly. And that is so often what it looks like, where you have the infancy, you have predation, and the children who are in these marriages for the vast majority, like all of them face these significantly higher rates of all kinds of terrible issues, including higher rates of domestic violence, significantly higher rates of severe mental and physical health issues, of poverty, of the end of your education. There are a whole host of reasons why the United States actually considers, in terms of our State Department, child marriage a human rights abuse. Marriage before age 18 or before the age of majority in a given country, human rights abuse. And we are...
Well, it is. And
to try to end it worldwide.
Most Americans throw their arms up and shout and, you know, they raise their fist in anger when we think of people in other countries who have arranged marriages with young girls and older men. Oh, that's a horrible thing. But when it's happening right here under our noses, they should be just as enraged.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And like I said, I think it's really gets into the fact that we don't even recognize it. We have a hard time recognizing when it's right in front of us, because it doesn't necessarily look like a gun to the head. So like starting to understand what that can look like and what that grooming looks like. And yes, if you have someone, if you have an adult man who is marrying a child, and particularly if they're a victim of statutory rape, this is not a situation that once you put the word matrimony on top of it, that all of a sudden everything is okay. The root of the situation is you still have a predator and an abuser who is taking advantage of a vulnerable child. It shouldn't make it okay to say, well, they're married now, so it's fine? Question mark?
No, it's not. I have a question for you to think about. I don't know if you're going to have an answer off the top of your head, but I have a feeling you do. 5 years ago, what or who hit that button that made you go, I have to write this story. I have to tell this story.
So while I was working at this nonprofit, I was working in the communications department, and we used to get a lot of different media requests. And some of the media requests were more along the lines of investigative journalism and really trying to shed light on that issue, which, you know, is always helpful to try to gain more understanding of what it looks like. But occasionally there were some that came in that really, really missed the mark. And there was one that really obviously the people contacting this organization didn't understand how horrible an abuse forced in child marriage was, because they wanted to have access to a child who was being forced to marry because they thought it would make compelling reality TV.
Oh,
and
no.
Reading that request just made my stomach turn. And I remember I was at home with my husband and I was just pacing and venting and saying, like, people just don't understand. They're like, they have no idea what they're asking. They don't realize what an abuse this is. I was going on and on and on. And in kind of a moment of a fit of frustration, I said something along the lines of, I mean, hell, I could probably make a documentary that helped to bring this to light or something. And he just casually went, well, why don't you?
Voila.
I already love him. I like your husband. He is very cool.
I'm a fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of the first spark. That was sort of what set me thinking.
What is the name of this nonprofit organization?
It's called the Tahereh Justice Center, and they do all kinds of great work on gender violence issues. And another organization, they're called Unchained at Last, is one that focuses entirely on forced and child marriage in the United States. So they are really the tip of the spear in terms of
advocacy. What was the first one?
Advocacy. Tahereh Justice Center. That's T-A-H-I-R-I-H.
Okay, I had that one almost right. I'm going to look them up I'm going to be looking those up. That's worthy of telling more stories about. That's amazing.
Definitely.
Oh, and in fact, the founder and executive director of Unchained at Last is an absolute amazing woman named Frady Reese, who is actually one of the three survivors who we feature in the documentary. So we were able to go really kind of deep on this issue. She is one of the leading expert for the United States and is always on the ground working constantly. I don't think she sleeps, honestly. I
I wouldn't know anything about that. When you're passionate about something, it's hard to sleep is overrated.
Yeah.
Now, you said it took you 5 years. What kind of crew did you have working with you, or did you do it completely alone?
Oh, I could not have done this alone. I have the most amazing, dedicated, hardworking, small crew that is family to me. So when I got started, I basically called up one of my best friends named Jasmine Lord. She's an amazingly talented cinematographer based out of LA, and we've been friends for a number of years, and so I'm familiar with her work. And I called her and said, look, I'm going to do this documentary. I don't know how. And I don't know how or if we're going to get funding. I'm just going to just put my life savings into this so that we can get started. Are you in? She said, absolutely. And then she started doing more research on the subject. And the more she learned, the more she became an absolutely passionate, dedicated advocate. She became one of the co-producers on the film. a lot of the time it was just me and her on the road with our equipment, and you know, my mom or my brother would be our production assistant for a number of years. And then we also had an amazing graphic designer, art director, production designer, Chris Cook, who's based out of Seattle, who helped guide the vision of the film and creatively from the beginning. Eventually, we brought an amazing editor named Darman in, and she's also fantastic. So we ended up creating this whole family of a very tight-knit group, without whom I could not have gotten to the finish line. Hell, I don't know if I would have gotten past the start.
Well, is this the first time you've done this sort of thing? Completely. You completely started from scratch and gathered everyone together.
Yeah. So my background is primarily in screenwriting. So I was focused mostly on screenwriting for close to a decade. So this is my first.
Well, that's a help.
First feature film. Yeah. So some understanding of story was there, which does help. But yeah, in terms of producing, directing, this was a whole new adventure and a total roller coaster, and one that I'm very glad I did not know what I was getting into, because I might have been too intimidated to start. But I'm so glad that I had my amazing crew around me the entire time. And then once we got started, the incredible thing too was that we had these three amazing survivors who are also excellent advocates, Nina, Sara, and Frady, who trusted us with their stories, with their life stories. And that really drove us on in moments where we were going, oh, we don't know how to find funding, and we're not getting grants, and we don't know how we're going to get to the next week, and oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It always came back to, they have trusted us with these stories. We have to figure this out. There is no question. We have to do it.
That's really cool. I want to talk a little bit more about them, but I have to take a real quick break. We'll be right back.
Let me ask you a question. Do you prefer coffee or tea? This is a question we ask on our fun and informative millennial talk show called Coffee or Tea, No Phones Allowed. And why do I know? Because I'm Anna. I'm one of the co-hosts. It's a great time. It's a professionally edited weekly series that's free to watch on Be Unique's YouTube channel. That's B-U-N-E-K-E. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode, and leave us a comment with your topic or guest recommendations. We love hearing from you.
All right, we are back. I am Mary. I'm here with Jean. Jean, say hello.
Howdy.
We're talking with Kate Brewer about her movie Notch, K-N-O-T-S, discussing forced marriage in the United States of America. If anybody would like to call in and weigh in on this subject, Jean, you want to give them the number?
Well, absolutely. 516-418-5651. And I was just going to say that until this evening in our conversation with Kate, I had no idea that this thing was as prevalent as it is in today's society in America.
Well, I knew that forced marriage was, that it does happen in the United States. I know that sex trafficking happens in the United States. And I would imagine both of those organizations, well, the Tahira Justice Center would probably work with that, wouldn't they? Kate?
Both organizations do work on that. And also, thank you for bringing up the trafficking aspect. Again, it's not something that people tend to think about, that you don't associate marriage with human trafficking.
People don't want to think about it because it's not pretty. And how dare it happen in our country when we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world?
Exactly. And so it's really, I think, about changing those mindsets and understanding not just what it looks like, but what we can do about it and how to recognize it, how to help prevent forced and child marriage. And one of the ways, because child marriage is a subset of forced marriage, and one of the ways that we can start to end forced marriage in the United States is by ending child marriage in the United States. Like, let's just close those loopholes so that if someone is facing a forced marriage, here's something interesting. If they're an adult, typically they can have access to a range of services. But if a child is forced to marry, once she's married, she has, and I say she because it is the majority of the time a younger girl married to an older man. The statistics that we do have from states overwhelmingly show that this is the case. So it's predation for the most part. And it's just astonishing how trapped they are, because they're still considered a minor in the eyes of the law. Marriage does not change that, and they're not allowed to file for divorce until they reach age 18.
Because they're not old enough.
They're not, they typically would be turned away from most domestic violence shelters because they would be considered a runaway and returned to their legal guardian, read spouse. There are a whole host of ways where they are absolutely trapped.
Because they can't even drive yet.
Exactly. They can't. There's so much that they can't do. And so forcing a child into a marriage traps them in ways that we have difficulty even imagining. I mean, they are stuck. They are truly stuck.
Well, you know, if a parent, any mother and child, mother, father, whatever, any parental unit, I should say, had a child that was under the age of 18, and they forced that child to stop going to school, stay home, do whatever it is they want them to do, mop, clean, cook, whatever, somebody will be reporting them to Child Protective Services and calling it abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Child endangerment. You're not letting this kid go to school. There are laws that require children to go to school, but if they're married, they don't have to, I guess.
Yeah, it's quite troubling because Child Protective Services can rarely intervene in these cases because once a child is married, then it's considered the child abuse is defined between guardian or a parent and a child, not a spouse and a child. So there's often little that they are able to do. I mean, children are really, unfortunately, have no protections when they're being forced to marry. They are forced into this situation where they face all kinds of horrible physical and sexual abuse on a constant basis. So it's really perverse to think about the way the loopholes say in the law basically allow for this predation and even give it a rubber stamp and say, yeah, that's because.
So how do we get our states to criminalize this? What's the answer?
Closing those loopholes to raise the minimum age of marriage to 18, no exceptions, is actually a very easy way to address this predation and to address this issue of child marriage in the United States, because as Frady really likes to say, it costs nothing, it hurts no one, and it protects vulnerable children from a world-recognized human rights abuse.
Yes.
Altogether, it's a win-win.
I turned 18 6 months before I got married the first time. I had no business getting married. I was still a child. You know, a lot of people at 18 are not really mature enough to be a spouse.
Well, and our laws have deemed that we're not mature enough at 18 years old to have a beer or
That's
rent a
right.
car. So when you're talking about something as complex and involved, I mean, you're talking about what is, when in theory, meant to be a lifelong contract. 18, that's the very least we can do. At least make it so that if people are, or children are in this situation going into a marriage, at least let them have the right to access help so that
yeah.
they are not completely trapped. And I remember reading some stipulation of law in Connecticut, I believe it was, that did allow for I think it was 16 and 17-year-olds or 17-year-olds to get married, which unfortunately, you know, many people think, oh, 17, oh, that's close enough to 18. It's really not. You're still talking about a child who is trapped by the law, cannot bring any sort of protective order or divorce in their defense, and is essentially facing sexual assault on a daily basis.
If I'm trying to think in terms of questions, I've got so many swimming in my head now. It's probably a good thing I didn't know more about you beforehand. Show would be 3 hours long. If a child, a 15-year-old, if a 15-year-old girl wants to get birth control pills, she needs an adult to go with her to say it's okay. Now, what happens if that same 15-year-old is in a forced marriage? She can't go to the doctor or whatever and say, I want birth control. Or if she gets pregnant, she needs an adult with her to take her to the doctor's appointments.
And that adult would be the adult spouse. Unfortunately, a lot of the times we're talking about the rapist who would be completely in control of their life.
Now, you probably know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask because I don't know it. What state has the youngest age that children can get married? Do you know?
That's a great question. There are actually, I believe, 10 states still on the books that have no minimum age limit.
Wait a minute. Whoa, whoa, whoa. So like a 6-year-old can get married?
In theory, yes. And in some states, there's actually Florida.
Which states are those?
Well, I know I would have to look. I have to look at a map, but I actually know Washington and California are two states that still have no minimum age.
Unbelievable.
No
minimum
age. Really, no minimum age.
You know, and if these children are destined for this, and as the term you use is real, if being groomed for this, they can grow up and not even know that they have options, even that they didn't have access to.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think about where my head was at as a 13-year-old. My goodness. I mean, there's a reason that we decide that there are certain ages where certain decision-making abilities are more appropriate. There's a reason for that. And the idea that we are still allowing for children, vulnerable children, to be forced into these marriages is really astonishing. I am very hopeful, though. I feel very positive about the growing momentum to end child marriage in America. Like I said, Rhode Island just became the fifth state to end it. And that was that bill to close those loopholes was entirely bipartisan and unanimous. And there's a bill that just passed in New York as well, a bipartisan bill to end child marriage in that state, which is just awaiting a signature from the governor. So I think that people are really really catching on, basically, and gaining an understanding that, oh, hey, this is still happening. Here's a simple way that we can all work together to protect the children of America, essentially. And it's something that, again, just is, we can, I think we can agree that it's important to protect childhood and to protect children.
Well, I think the overall ten that we've gone to in my lifetime over the last 60 years is moving away from our innocence, this childhood innocence that we started off with, and you know, we grow up and lose. But I think we've gotten completely away from it, where it's we don't even know how to act anymore. And I think I'm looking for this awareness thing. I'm getting ready to go say stuff all over the country. And I, with this in mind, I had no idea that more people need to know about the prevalence of this and that, you know, and what they can do about it. So I'm really fortuitous that we had this conversation tonight, I think.
Yes.
Oh,
Kate, you mentioned knowing how to identify it. How can you look at a couple or a child on her own and know if she's been forced into a marriage?
Well, unfortunately, that's where it's a little more challenging in some ways. In some ways, it's fairly simple. If you see a child who is entering into a marriage with an adult, then you can assume for the most part that there is some level of grooming or coercion there. But, you know, there are different signs that experts and advocates look at and that are teaching people on the front lines, particularly teachers and doctors and different kind of police and medical first responders who might be able to start to recognize certain signs of a forced marriage situation. You know, it can include a girl suddenly kind of disappearing from school or suddenly dropping in and having this kind of overwhelming sense of dread that she may not be able to talk about, but there are changes to her performance and her demeanor and comfort with something going on at home. And obviously those can be signs of a lot of different things. And forced child marriage is something that really you kind of have a lot of different types of abuses that are often wrapped up in there, which is kind of what makes it challenging. But if you're looking at an adult male going in to marry a child, you can pretty safely assume that there is some level of coercion or grooming there. And the interesting thing too about this issue is the parents or the family members or the guardians who are forcing a child into marriage, it's really a spectrum in terms of their motivation. So sometimes you have absolutely terrible, horrible, harmful motivation. And sometimes you have parents who really feel like they're doing the best that they can for their child and thinking their child is going to be safe or taken care of or protected or clothed or fed, you know, a whole range. Unfortunately, the motivation and the result aren't necessarily correlated. The result is overwhelming harm. Regardless of the motivation.
Well, even if the harm is, and I don't want to use the word just or merely, if the harm is psychological, not physical, it's still harmful. It may not be something.
Absolutely.
You may not be able to see. You can't see the bruises. You can't see the damage, but it's being done.
Exactly. And that psychological damage is tremendously traumatizing for those who are going through it. And unfortunately, I've had conversations with Frady before, who works with directly with all kinds of women and girls who are facing or fleeing forced and child marriages. And she says when they're not able to do anything to legally help the children, unfortunately, a lot of them turn to suicide, whether that is before the marriage or sometime during the marriage.
Well, yeah, that makes perfect sense, because if you are trapped, totally trapped in this situation, and you know there's no other way out, at some point you just have to make your way out. I've known people who've done that. And it's horrifying. It's terrible on the family. They weren't enforced marriages,
really,
but they had other psychological damage that made them feel like they couldn't survive any other way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So even if you don't, even without bruises, there's still deep scars and there's still trauma. And that is something that I think we as a society are working to get better at recognizing. We still have a little ways to go, but you know, we're working on recognizing the impact that really does have.
I had a question and it slipped my mind for just a moment. It'll come back.
Well,
never mind.
I want to take a second here to tell any of our listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you do so. Call us here at 516-418-5651. Appreciate it.
Gene, thank you, because mm-hmm. you helped me. I wanted to know, is there a hotline for people to call if they feel they are in a forced marriage?
So if people are facing a forced marriage, then I would highly encourage them to either call Unchained at Last or the Tahereh Justice Center. Both are organizations that can and do provide services and work with people around the country. So I don't have the number.
I do. I'm way ahead of you. My husband's been hearing the conversation, and he's been feeding me information through my phone, and it's amazing because he sent me a link, and it made me think a minute about this. It says marriage age is not the same thing as age of consent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that's important.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have. One really interesting aspect of this discussion is the act of sexual intercourse is something that is brief. It can have long consequences, but it is a kind of limited encounter that doesn't necessarily hold lifelong legal ramifications. It can, but it often doesn't. What you're talking about with marriage is a legal contract that does have lifelong consequences, whether you're in that marriage for a lifetime or not. Some women and girls are fortunate enough to be able to escape those marriages at some point, although typically by the time they do, it's many years later and there's a lot of trauma involved, and often children, and there's intergenerational trauma as well when you're talking about a girl who is forced to marry and forced to become a young mother.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it is an interesting part of that discussion.
I remember very vaguely a story about a young woman And this actually involved incest as well as, I don't think there was forced marriage, but there was a young woman whose father basically fell in love with her. And he imprisoned her, and she became pregnant over and over again. And at some point she broke away. I want to say this was in Netherlands. But she escaped with one of her children and got help after almost 20 years. And so then those children were, they were traumatized too. They had no idea what the outside world was like.
Yeah. And that, I remember that story. And that is an absolutely horrific case and a very extreme case of all kinds of horrible abuse perpetuated. What's, I think, probably important to understand with the children of forced marriage is that, I mean, you go beyond the kind of psychological issues and emotional things that you have to work through with a divorce. Whether it's amicable or not, but you start to get into understanding that the dynamics of your parent or one of your parents being someone who perpetuated a great deal of harm against another and trying to find your place in all of that, it's incredibly damaging. It's incredibly challenging. And I've heard a number of stories of survivors of forced marriage who got out because they started to see that pattern of grooming where the community or their spouse or someone was trying to groom their children for forced marriage, and that is what inspired them to get out because they didn't want that same abuse perpetuated. And wow. And so they managed to go on behalf of their children. So there's obviously, a great deal, a tremendous amount of love for their children, for those who have survived forced marriage. But it also, of course, it's going to be a challenge to not only deal with the trauma that they experienced, but, you know, really try to walk their children through that intergenerational trauma. So it's really just not worth it for anyone.
I stand corrected. I did a real quick little research on that case we were talking about. The father who abducted his daughter, imprisoned her for 24 years, was in Austria, not Netherlands.
Right.
And that was just, it was horrifying. She had three children by her father.
You know, well, and I was just going to say this, the thing about these poor children is that they just, that's all they ever know. I mean, how many of them will never know until they grow up? Like the ones who see their children being groomed, they didn't know that until they saw it happening from the other side. And I mean, it's amazing to me, just like you're saying, how prevalent it is everywhere around and how people just look the other way because it's one of those things that's acceptable.
Well, I'm grateful.
Somehow. Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of young women who are grateful that you didn't look the other way, Kate.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, well, full credit to my whole team and the incredible survivors who were brave enough to share their stories to bring this to light. Yeah, they're for all of those women and girls and all those facing any situation like this, I just want them to know that they're not alone, that there are people who care and there are people who are fighting for them.
Yes, yes. And that's the important thing. Somebody is out there, and even though you feel alone, you're not. There's someone out there who is working hard, staying up until 3 o'clock in the morning to do a podcast to bring it to life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what's next for the film, Kate?
Well, the film is out now. It's amazing to be at this point. It's out. It's in the world. It's available on a number of platforms, including Apple TV. So it's at this point, it's about continuing to get the word out, continuing to have these conversations and asking the difficult questions and really working together to gain a better understanding of how to make positive change.
Do you have a website? Or a
yes.
way that you would
so,
want for people to contact you?
Absolutely. So the website for the film is notthefilm.com. That's K-N-O-T-S, thefilm.com. And we have a submission form on there if anyone would like to reach out.
Okay, excellent. Are you on social media? Or is the
yes.
film on social media?
It is, yes. It is on Instagram, it's at NotTheFilm. On Twitter, it's also at NotTheFilm. And then on Facebook, it's facebook.com/NotsDocumentary.
Yeah, Facebook is always the weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, it always is. I always have to remind
not
myself. Like,
documentary?
Not
are there
documentary.
Any
documentary.
Not documentary, right?
Not documentary. That should be it.
Any underscores or anything like that?
Oh, nope. It shouldn't be. It should just be.
Okay. Just want to make sure. I want to make sure
oh,
that
yeah.
people can find you and learn more about the film and make
mm-hmm.
purchases. And now, is this a not-for-profit film or is it just for exposure? I'm trying to think of what the word. What am I looking for, Gene? Fill in my word by blank.
Awareness.
Awareness. That's exactly the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily think we're ever going to be in the black on this film, and that is totally okay by me. This film is a passion project. It is entirely designed to really try to raise awareness and try to help make a positive change. So
is there anything that our audience can do to help?
100%. Outside of, continuing to have these conversations to help raise awareness and gain a better understanding, find out what your laws are in your state. Find out whether there are bills that are pending in your state that you're able to support. And if not, there could be local organizations that are working to introduce a bill like this. So a lot of it comes down to call your representative. Let them know that this is an issue that you're interested in solving.
Well, and I think, too, at this point, going and taking a look at the film or even just telling your neighbors about it, just telling people about it is just the awareness thing. Yeah. Go look at the film, people, and tell your neighbors about it. Show them the film.
Yeah, share it online, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will be doing that. I'll be sharing it.
Oh, thank you. Well, there are a whole host of resources to really get into what this issue looks like and what it's all about. So whether it's the film, a whole bunch of articles, Unchained at Last, any of these things, have those conversations, ask those difficult questions. I guarantee you that in a very short amount of time, you will probably find someone in your circle who either has experienced something like this or knows someone who has experienced something like this.
Well, I do. And I don't think of myself that way, but I'm like, wow, I know so many people that have been touched by this in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they grow up that way and teach their kids, unless some of them, like you pointed out, some get away, but the families and the cultures that just keep it perpetuating and looking
right.
the other way.
Well, there was another, if this was not a forced marriage situation, but it was a pedophilia, a young boy had been kidnapped and it was basically treated as the son to a couple, two men that lived out in a cabin somewhere away from everybody. I think his name was Charlie. And when he was 15 or 16, these men went out and captured another five-year-old. And Charlie realized what was happening. And so he, up until then, he had been groomed to think this was normal. This was life. This was just the way it is. And he realized that it wasn't normal. It wasn't right. And this other child, this much younger child, was going to be Charlie's replacement, basically. So Charlie made an escape and took the other little boy with him. I don't have the words to express the kind of disbelief in humanity for doing the things that we do to our children.
Absolutely. And that's a really important point too, is that the children who are going through this, they might go through this, they a lot of the time do not realize what's going on because they are children and because they are so easily manipulated. So just because a child isn't acting out in a way that we expect doesn't mean that they're not being forced or coerced or groomed into the situation.
Yeah.
So that is an excellent point.
And I think that grooming is the key. It takes time, and they convince these children, especially young girls, who may have other issues going on, but they're very easily manipulated and very easily turned into what the predator is looking for.
Exactly.
It's a sad situation.
Yeah.
Well, we have come to the
really
end of our show. And typically at this point, it's been an hour. This is when Gene and I like to leave our audience with some words that we hope they will carry them through the rest of the week at least. And I'll start, Kate, I'll ask you to think of something that you'd like to leave the audience with. I always tell everybody, no matter what you do, you can always be kind. And this applies to what we've been talking about. You don't know what the person that you're looking at or dealing with is going through. You never can tell if that other person maybe has been forced into a situation, and maybe that's why they're acting the way they are. So just be kind. Have you got some words, Kate?
I think my words would be, again, just reiterating that you are not alone. You are not alone.
Especially
if you're facing any situation like this. I know it can feel extremely isolating, but you are not alone.
Thank you. Gene?
That's so important. So important. You know, and I tell you what, we all face everything that we face every day. The way we do, and for my own self, I found that if I'm not having fun, I'm not doing it right. So I'll just leave that there.
And, you know, that applies in this situation, because a lot of the things that these young girls are going through is not fun, I can promise you.
Nope. Nope. Not at all.
Exactly.
Well, Kate, I hope you sleep well tonight. I hope you enjoy the rest of your holiday, vacation, trip, whatever you're calling it. And thank you for what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on today. It was such an honor. It was such a pleasure. Pleasure sounds like a weird word when you're talking about something like this, but I do find it's really gratifying to have these deep conversations. So thank you so much for that opportunity.
Oh, absolutely.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for coming.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening this evening.
We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.